hello, sons, and hello, brothers. I'm Ken Pierpont, and this is Stuff I Want to Say, Mostly to Men, a weekly podcast to encourage, to inspire, and to instruct men who want to follow Jesus and help others follow Jesus. So grab a cup of coffee and pull up a chair. Let's talk. So, gentlemen, let me ask you, where do you listen to this podcast? I've loved radio since I was a kid. My dad had an old Studebaker that he worked on every Saturday. And we lived in a little town called Logansville, Ohio. And on Saturday, he'd be out maintaining that Studebaker and listening to the radio, usually the pregame for the Buckeyes or the game itself. He listened. We often listened when we lived in that area of the state of Ohio to a radio station from Springfield, a Christian radio station from Springfield, Ohio, called WEEC. We'd often listen to that. I would listen to that when I would be going to sleep at night, and I would listen to a program from Moody Bible Institute. It was called Night Sounds with Chuck Wagner. That was inherited from Bill Pierce and was called Night Watch at the time, quiet music as I would go to sleep at night. In the summertime, I would often listen to the Reds on WLW out of Cincinnati. Something about radio, right? And podcasts are a little bit like radio on demand. You can listen to what you want to listen to. You can listen when you want to listen. This morning, I have turned my writing loft into a recording studio. So this isn't sound treated. It's not soundproof. It's almost, this morning, it will almost be like, and this may be something I do regularly because it works so well. It's almost like live radio on site because you may hear the sound of a train whistle in the distance, or you may hear the drone of a plane flying overhead, or an occasional car passing in the morning, or here in the early darkness of the morning, somebody is on their way to work, and you know what? I bet they're listening to the radio or to a podcast. So this morning, we record here in the writing loft that I'm grateful to my sons and my son-in-law for helping me create. They built the wall and hung the door for me, and then I've finished it since then. I still got a little work to do on it. I wish you could be here with me and that we could just sit and we could talk. But here we are out on Bittersweet Farm, and God has taken something really bad and turned it into something good. So we call the place Bittersweet. Something really dark, God made it light and glorious. Something very ugly, God made it beautiful, and kind of a sin against our family, against our daughter, against our family. God turned it from dark to light, from bad to good, from ugly to beautiful. And yes, he did. He turned it from bitter to sweet, and I remind myself about that every day when I think of the name of our little place we call Bittersweet Farm. And this loft, this writing loft, is in the top of a century-old carriage house. A quarter of the building has been converted into a writing loft and a quiet place where I can contemplate the things of the Lord, where I can write, where I can pray. And I have a little sign a parishioner made for us, a beautiful hand-painted sign called, in Old English letters, Bittersweet Farm. They gave it to us as a gift. And not many months after that, I preached her funeral. But I have that sign hanging on this building. It says Bittersweet Farm. Injury or betrayal, and I suppose we all have. In all your ways, trust the one who turns things that are ugly into things that are beautiful and turns dark things to light. and turns ugly things beautiful and turns bitter things sweet. Trust him today. Trust him and remember that God's will is what you would always choose if you knew the future. Well, today on this podcast, I want to talk to you about leadership. Now, leadership, I always think it's interesting when people talk about leadership as if it's something that you just have a few principles that's very easy. I've never found leadership to be easy. Leadership is an enigma. It's a mystery. And today, what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk to you about a man and his leadership. I want to talk to you about demystifying leadership by studying one of the greatest, if not the most unlikely leaders, a reluctant leader in the Bible. And this was a man who actually, he wrote the book on leadership. In fact, he wrote five books on leadership that are cherished by Jewish people and by Christian people and others all over the world for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And the books are the Pentateuch, and the leader is Moses. Moses had an experience that's recorded in the book of Exodus that we're going to study today to demystify leadership, men. If you're a man, you're a leader. If you're a husband, you're a leader. If you're a dad, you're a leader. A grandfather, you're a leader. Hopefully, you're a leader in your church. Or as you get older and older, you become more and more of a leader in your church. Goodness, America needs godly leadership. Every town and village, every church and school, every office and shop needs godly, selfless, loving, skilled, consistent leadership. And so I wanted today, on the podcast today, what I want to do is I want to share with you some principles that I noticed a few years ago as I was studying. I was reading through Exodus, and I noticed that here was Moses, probably a lot like me in the sense that God called him to lead, but he always felt like, how do you get stubborn people to do what you know they ought to do? And they tend to be so stubborn and rebellious and selfish and sinful, or other people seem like they're more gifted than I am. And what? How do you lead? What we can learn from Moses. Moses was a man who was called from God, and God chose Moses and used him. So I want to give you some principles of leadership. Let me see. 1, 2, 3. How many do I have this morning? 4. I should know this. 5, 6, 7. Oh, surprise, surprise. No. 8, 9. Here we are. 9 principles of leadership. 9, and they are 9 observations from Moses' life, things that made him a leader used of God. And we don't want to be bullies for God. We don't want to be rash and ugly with people. We don't want to lead with anger or force. We don't want to pull rank on people all the time. I'm your husband, you have to do what I say. I'm your dad, you have to do what I say. And we want to be able to lead without the frustration of feeling like, man, nobody respects me and nobody does what they ought to do. But a leader, a man could learn from Moses here. And so that's what we're going to show you these. What did I say? 8 things. Number one, if you want to lead, if God has called you to lead and he has, number one, genuinely love people. Genuinely love people. You see this in Moses' life. God had decided he was going to judge his people. Moses goes before God and he intercedes for his people. And you can tell by the way he prays for them that he loves them. But Moses implored the Lord, his God, and said, O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say with evil intent did he bring them out to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from your burning anger and relent from this disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have promised I will give to your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever. And the Lord relented from the disaster that he had spoken of bringing on his people. Exodus 32:11-14. Moses loved the people and interceded for them. And Moses was a leader because he genuinely loved the people. A leader must genuinely love the people. And you want to cultivate genuine selfless love for your wife and genuine selfless love for your children. They're not just here to serve your needs and desires. You are here to lay down your life for them. That's your calling. Second thing, have face-to-face intimacy with the Lord. Have face-to-face intimacy with the Lord. Moses had this experience. Exodus 33:11 says, thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face-to-face, as a man speaks to his friend. When Moses turned again into the camp, his assistant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent. Exodus 33:11. Exodus 33:19 says, and he said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, God speaking to Moses. I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. And then that was verse 19 of chapter 33. And then in chapter 34, verses 5 through 7, the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and on the children's children to the third and fourth generation. This is serious, serious business. But Moses knew the heart of God. He had face-to-face intimacy with God. He went to be with God. He cherished his times with God. And so must every man do if he would lead for God. And then Exodus 34, 27 through 29 say, and the Lord said to Moses, write these words, for in accordance with these words, I have made a covenant with you and with Israel. So he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water. He wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand, as he came down from the mountain, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. Gentlemen, keep that in mind. Moses had physical evidence on his face that he had experienced intimacy with God. And that you probably remember, if you've been listening to these podcasts, what it means to be a man is to be the glory of God, go into the presence of God faithfully and regularly, live coram Deo in the presence of God. And when you do that, the mark of that meeting with God will be on your countenance. And I believe that there will be a sense in which the people in your life know that you have been with God. And that's a currency for leadership. And I just think your wife, your children, the people in your life you need to lead for their good and for God's glory are more likely to have confidence in you and trust you when they know that you spend time with God and that you cultivate intimacy with God and that you that you have a sense of the presence of God, you know, all day, every day, have this intimacy with the Lord. And so that's number two, have face-to-face intimacy with the Lord. So number one, a leader genuinely loves people. And number two, a leader has face-to-face intimacy with God. And then number three, a leader does what God says. So number three is do what God tells you. Every detail, be faithful and complete in thorough in your obedience. In Exodus 39:7, it says, and he set them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod to be stones of remembrance for the sons of the Lord, sons of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses, as he did what the Lord commanded. In verse, all this was done in accordance with the Lord's instruction to Moses, it says in the Living Bible. Moses did everything God told him to do. Gentlemen, this isn't rocket science. You love people. You spend time with God. You do what he tells you to do. You obey. A man who wants his wife to obey God, a man who wants his children to obey God, and he should desperately want his children to obey God, needs to show them what it looks like by being a man who is obedient to God over and over and over again in your life. The ones who love you should see that you are obsessed with obedience to God. You're genuinely loving. You have face-to-face intimacy with God. And then you obey God down to every detail. You're complete in your obedience. Number four, you get spirit-filled, gifted people to help you where you're weak. And this is critical. Goodness, this is an important part of leadership. This is a vital part of leadership. Get other spirit-filled, gifted people to help you in your weakness. In the year 2007, I was called to a church that had a very, very large building, a very large building on a thoroughfare, and the building looked like it was brick, but it wasn't brick. It was covered with a thing called face brick. I didn't even know such a thing existed. When I interviewed there, a key leader in the church, Bill Musham was his name, was involved in school administration, and he was a fine, godly man. He was the chairman of the search. Well, he was the chairman of the deacons, I think, at the time. And he was walking me through the church and showing me the building before I was called to pastor. And he was asking me questions. And he showed me that. He walked to the side of the building. He goes, I want you to see something. We've got a real serious problem we have to address. I want you to see it. And he hit the side of the building with his fist, and the brick crumbled underneath where he hit it. He said, the whole building is covered with this face brick, and it's failing and falling off the building. We literally have to re-brick the entire building. It was going to be like a $1 million project. It was projected to be that. He said to me, what would you do about that? What was interesting to me was maybe 7 years earlier, I would not have known what to tell him because I don't have any building experience. I didn't have any. I think I roofed for a summer. But I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to face brick. I didn't know face brick existed before he showed me. He says, what would you do if you were our pastor? You would have to address this problem. How would you address it? Well, a few years before, God had called me to lead in a ministry that had a huge hotel, much, much larger than this huge church. It was a huge hotel in downtown Flint. It was 16 stories and 500 rooms and two restaurants and huge ballrooms and conference centers and kitchens and office space and a pavilion and just a lot. And I was responsible for that. And here's what I discovered. I couldn't come close to doing everything myself. I had to have people who knew what they were doing, that we could delegate the work to. I needed good people, good men and good women. And God sent good men, and he sent good men. Better yet, let me say it this way. God sent gifted men and gifted women who had a desire to help in the goal that we had before us. And I want you to understand, you should understand as a husband, as a dad, as a leader in your work and your place of business, that if God has led you to be where you are, God will raise up people around you who have just the right gifts and just the right gift mix and skills to do the things that need to be done. Your job as a leader is to discern who the spirit-filled, gifted people are who will help you in areas where you are weak or just completely unable. And so this man, Bill Musham, he asked me that question. And here's what I said to him. I said, I don't know anything about that, but I will tell you this. I believe with all my heart that when a job needs to be done in a church, that God will place people with the gifts or the resources or both to do that job. And the job of a leader is to walk with God and find out who God has raised up to do that, and then appoint them and then support them. And so get spirit-filled. And that project was finished way ahead of time and way, way under budget. And if you drive by that building today on that major thoroughfare, you see a beautiful, huge brick church building for the glory of God. Because God used Bill Musham, and because at least I was able to recognize who God raised up and encourage him and support him. So get spirit-filled, gifted people to help you where you're weak. Let's review the principles of leadership observed in the life of Moses. Number one, genuinely love people. Be willing to suffer. Be willing to sacrifice. Sincerely love them. Think about them. Number two, have face-to-face intimacy with the Lord. Walk with God and value intimacy with God and get your directions from God. Number three, do what God tells you to do. Every detail. Be complete in your obedience. Number four, get spirit-filled, gifted people to help you in the areas where you are weak. Listen to what it says in Exodus 31, 1 through 5. This is fascinating. When I read this, it resonated with my soul and my experience. God has always given me men and women, has raised up people who heard my messages and spent time with me and believed in what we were doing and wanted to be a part of it and wanted to help. God has always raised up people with gifts that I don't have and with intelligence that I don't have and just with experience that I don't have. Anyway, Exodus 31, 1 through 5, the Lord said to Moses, "See, I've called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, son of Hur, tribe of Judah, Bezalel. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God." Did you catch that? He filled Bezalel with the Spirit of God and the ability and with the intelligence and with the knowledge and all craftsmanship to devise artistic designs and to work in gold and silver and bronze and cutting stones for setting and in covering wood to work in every craft. So God gave Moses a project here and to build the tabernacle, to erect the tabernacle. But he raised up Bezalel, filled him with the Holy Spirit, and Bezalel had all these gifts. This isn't just some ancient thing that happened a long time ago. This happens wherever God is at work. God will give a man a vision, and he'll give him a burden and for his family, for his church, for his business, for the organization that he leads. And then he will stir up his heart in that, and he will give him instructions that are based on God's objectives in the world. But then alongside, he will raise up other people, and a wise, godly leader will recognize those other spirit-filled people, and he will recruit them, or he will encourage them, and he will support them to help in the areas where he's weak. When I went to the place was called the Character Inn, the 16-story hotel Christian ministry in Flint. When I went there, it was woefully understaffed, and I thought maybe that the headquarters would just magically send me gifted people, and that is not what happened. people that wanted to work with me that actually knew me from the past. Here's an example. We needed a man to come and supervise young men and a woman to come and supervise young women in their work. And we needed another young man that would come and would lead them in their ministries. So what we did in the building was that we all lived there in the building and then rose early in the morning for a chapel service every day and then had a wonderful breakfast. And then after a nice chapel and full breakfast, we had a time of instruction and we had the young people reading some of the richest Christian biographies and Christian devotional literature that have been useful and helpful to me and life-changing for me, and then having discussions about those writings and then doing writing about those writings. But then they would have, in the afternoon, they would have work projects that was there because it didn't cost anything to be in the program, but they had work projects that they would do that would kind of pay their way. And then when they didn't have work projects to do, then they had times of ministry when they would go out into the city to witness at the bus station, or they would work in the homeless shelter or in the rescue mission. Anyway, we needed helpers in those programs. We needed a person that knew HVAC on a really large scale, and we had none of those people. We didn't have the people that we needed to turn the rooms over for the guest, to freshen the rooms or to clean the rooms and to do the laundry. And so we had a very skeleton crew. And I began to pray. Actually, I began to desperately cry out to God. It was amazing. I was speaking at Camp Barakel, and a man named Ken was there. Ken Krause was his name. He heard about what we were doing when I spoke at Camp Barakel, and he wanted to come and be a part of it. I didn't think he could do it, but he eventually came with his family, and he moved into the building, and he was a super handy guy who just fixed whatever he could see needed to be fixed. And on top of that, he knew my heart for my sons, Dan and Wes, who were kind of young boys then. At the time, I was concerned because I was so busy running the big hotel Christian ministry that I was and he watched them. He would involve them in projects and really befriended them. And they'd be lifelong. They'll be grateful for all their lives for Ken Krause. And I'll be grateful for all my life for Ken and Penny Krause and his daughter, their daughter, actually, Kimberly, actually met her husband there, and they have a nice Christian marriage now. So anyway, God raised him up. This is what leadership looks like. You have jobs, you don't even know how to describe them, but God will raise up somebody who believes in what you're doing, and then that person will have gifts in that area, and they're spirit-filled people who want to help you. I think back about a guy that God raised up, a guy named Gary Mickle, who was really far from God. And we met his wife, and then we met him, and he came to really follow God with all of his heart. And he was a very gifted, very sacrificial, very, very servant-oriented guy. And for the 10 years I was in Knox County, Ohio, he was my right-hand guy. I can't tell you how many times he saw I was out of my depth, and I needed what I couldn't do and had no skill, no experience, and sometimes no money. It right beneath me in this carriage house, a set of shelves, really shelves that would survive a nuclear blast. He built them out of concrete forms for me because he saw I didn't have a place for my treasured books. And I remember once he took his holiday and replaced the timing chain on my old car to keep my car going. Went to a lot of difficulty, went to a lot of expense. I could tell you dozens of things, but God will raise up people like that. Back in the Character Inn in Flint, in the hotel ministry in Flint, we needed somebody to supervise the young men. And I got a call from a man who he's now with the Lord. His name was Arlen Mills. And Arlen was a veterinarian. And I'm like, he says, my wife would like to come and volunteer in the ministry. We read about what you're doing. and we would really love to be a part of it. And I thought, well, we don't have any animals here. And he laughed and he said, we just want to do whatever is needed. What's needed? And I explained to him, he says, we can do that. He came and he broke a sweat every day supervising our young people's projects. And his wife supervised the young ladies in the turning over of the rooms. Those people served, listen, at their own expense. They came, lived in the building, they ate with us, but they volunteered their time. And they were godly people. And God just raised them up to the vision that he had given to us. And they came and they served. And they were an amazing blessing. And there were others that came. Mr. Williams and his family came from the Washington, D.C. area, moved into the building and just went to work here, there, and everywhere. And then there was a young man that came our way, a single young man who was one of the most gifted people in ministry I have ever met, a bright, joyful, gifted guy, Michael Bresna. Michael came and he headed up our ministry teams with, and he has this musical ability, so he had him singing, he had him witnessing. He eventually went to Dallas Seminary and then pastor of the Mayfair Bible Church. Michael Bresna is now a military chaplain at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. You can pray for him right now. This is what happens when you get instructions from the Lord and you love people and you have intimacy with God and you do what God says. God will raise people up to do what you can't do. They'll have tools you don't have. They'll have experience that you don't have. They'll have ability that you don't have. This is what leadership is about. Leadership is respecting those people very highly and letting them be a part of what God is doing. Number five, don't compromise and do wrong to accomplish good for God. Exodus 34, 15 through 17. Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and when they whore after their gods and sacrifice to their gods, and you are invited, you eat of his sacrifice, and you take of their daughters for your sons, and their daughters whore after their gods, and make your sons whore after their gods. You shall not make yourself any gods of cast metal. Moses, God warns Moses, don't compromise and do wrong to accomplish what God has commanded you to do. And gentlemen, how important is that? There are going to be opportunities to cut corners, to compromise, to sin, throughout your life. And when you're a young man, you want to decide there will be no compromise with wrong. I won't do wrong to accomplish some good. That's number five. So number six, a leader explains God's commands to the people. A leader explains God's commands to the people. And remember that Moses felt inadequate about the speaking part. And he, man, you got to meet my brother. He's got a golden tongue. And Moses is like, here's what it says in Exodus 34, 31. But Moses called to them, and Aaron, and that's his brother, all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses talked with them. Leadership is storytelling, brothers. Leadership is storytelling. Moses assembled all the congregation of the people of Israel and said to them, these are the things that the Lord has commanded you to do. He gathered the people. He said, this is what God said. Gentlemen, this is what you got to do. You got to gather the people and you have to say, here are our instructions. And you have to tell the stories and give the commands of God. Now, number seven, a leader inspires people to help and give. The rank and file, he inspires people to help and give. Exodus 35, 20. Then all the congregation of the people of Israel departed from the presence of Moses, and all the men and women, the people of Israel, whose heart moved them to bring anything for the work that the Lord had commanded by Moses to be done, brought it as a freewill offering to the Lord. And this is a thing that you will find shocking, and I've always found surprising, and that is when God gives you an assignment, and it's consistent with his heart, when he lets you join him in the work that he's doing, then he will raise up people that will help you where you're weak, and he will raise up people that will give because they love God. And it's amazing what God will do and where money will come from, that God's people will and your job as a leader is to do these other things, and they inspire people to give and to help. And don't be shy about asking them to give and to help. And then number eight, after they help, inspect their work and bless them. According to all, this is Exodus 39, 42, and 43. According to all that the Lord had commanded Moses, so the people of Israel had done all the work. And Moses saw all the work, and behold, they had done it as the Lord had commanded, so they had done it. And Moses blessed them. Did you catch it? Bless the people when you inspect their work. My goodness, this is important with your wife. Sometimes I hear a man say, I know my wife wants to be affirmed, and I just not that way. Well, brother, you need to get that way. It'd be almost like your wife saying to you, well, you know, I just don't feel like, you know, I just don't feel like cooking. Or I'm really, you know, we have kids, but I'm not really good at, you know, laundry or cleaning the house. Or maybe, yeah, you know, I know we're married, and I know that you desire these things, you know, physically, but I'm just not kind of wired that way. Well, gentlemen, that you would find that to be painful to hear now, wouldn't you? And when you say, I can't say warm, kind things to my wife, I would say to you, you learn to speak with kindness to her. This is something that the Lord's put in my heart lately. You know, even with Lois and I, we've been married for 43 years. We've known each other 44 years. So that's a few years. You can become very familiar with people that you live with, and where your speech is very unguarded and sometimes even a little bit rude. And then you have some resentment for things, or some misunderstanding or some understanding. And so your conversation and your responses to them are not as careful as your responses say to a practical stranger that you might work with. These things ought not so to be. So the Lord has shown me of late, just in the last few weeks, I've thought about this a lot, and that is, speak kindly and to Lois. Bless your wife. Bless your children. Leadership is giving example, it's giving instruction, it's obeying and encouraging other people to obey and to give and to use their talents and gifts. But leadership is affirming people when they do what's right. And this is huge. And you know it, and if you know a little bit, if you've read anything about business management, you know this to be true, that really good leaders go around finding people doing things right and really encouraging that. So number eight is inspect their work and bless them. And number nine is watch God. This is the fun one. Watch God visit the work with his glory, with his manifest presence. And then after all this was done, then the tabernacle was completed in Exodus 40, 34. It says, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. There is such a thing as the manifest presence of the Lord, the manifest presence of the Lord. And it's often expressed in the Bible as the glory of the Lord. It's the manifest presence, it's the blessing of the Lord. It's the work of God and the glory of God. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. What a wonderful close there to the story. Now, there's one thing that should activate a leader to lead, or maybe show him that he's failing to lead or needs to lead, and that is this, and it just is a little something extra for you, and that is grumbling. When your heart grumbles, and when you hear murmuring among the people at work, and often I have coached guys over the years who I remember one fellow named Steve Thompson, who was really frustrated at work. And I asked him to breakfast to just listen to him and pray for him. And we went to this little place called the Dogwood Inn, and we had breakfast that morning. And I listened to him And I basically explained to him this providence of God, that even though people at his company were complaining and bringing him complaints, the main thing I told him that day after listening to him was, number one, you're not paid by the company to listen to other people's grumbling and complaints. That won't go well for you. So send people to the right person for that. And secondly, recognize the things that are going on are part of God's plan to make you who he wants you to be. And he said, he would tell me for years, and he became the vice president of that company. He became the school board chairman of the school board. Everyone recognizes Steve as a really good, godly, faithful, strong leader. And he always would remind me of that time that we met at the Dogwood Inn. He didn't need much instruction. He just took that and went with it. But it was recognizing how to handle grumbling and how to handle murmuring and not joining in with the grumbling and murmuring that really kind of turned him around and it really kind of gave him wisdom and insight that eventually he was promoted. And when we left town about 10 years later, the last thing that we did was he called me on the phone. He said, "Hey, meet me at the Dogwood Inn for breakfast again." And he's thanked me many times. Not too long ago, he came through town here. He and his wife met me at Cracker Barrel. I guess there's a pattern there, isn't there? And they thanked me again with tears on their face. And all I really did, of course, was just encourage them that God was at work in what they were doing and to see the hand of God and not to murmur or to give into murmuring or grumbling. A leader turns grumbling and murmuring into problem solving and projects, and he gets things done. There's an example of this in the book of Acts. Remember the Grecian widows, the Hellenistic widows were feeling neglected in the daily distribution of food, and there was some murmuring, there was some grumbling. And the leaders, they didn't preach a series on grumbling and beat down the Grecian widows for complaining. They didn't yell and get angry. They dealt with the problem by recruiting young Greek men to make sure the Greek widows were not neglected in the daily administration. Those leaders sprang into action to meet the need. They addressed things. This is what a leader does. A leader listens, sees problems, listens to grumbling, sees, you know, sinful reactions, prays, seeks the Lord, finds out what would please God, recruits people, raises up people. He rolls up his sleeves and acts himself, and he deals with those problems. They don't chastise the people for having those problems or even for responding improperly to those problems. They didn't preach a series of scathing messages on complaining. They just led. They solved the problem. And that, to me, is a fascinating thing. It's interesting, the grumbling of the people, it calls for leadership. In Exodus 16:2, it says the whole community grumbled. And then in Exodus 16:9, it says Moses and Aaron heard their grumbling. And then in Exodus 16:11, it says the Lord heard their grumbling. This is interesting. C.S. Lewis had this to say about grumbling. Hell begins with a grumbling mood, always complaining and blaming others, but you are still distinct from it. You may even criticize it in yourself and wish you could stop it, but there may come a day when you can no longer, and then there will be no one left to criticize the mood or even to enjoy it, but just the grumble itself going on forever like a machine. It's not a question of God sending us to hell. In each of us, there is something growing which will be hell unless it's nipped in the bud. But there is a hell. There is a place of eternal conscious torment. But a symbol of that torment is a place where no leaders follow God and inspire people and raise up people. Listen, think. I know where you are. If you're driving your truck today, or if you're driving your car, you're commuting to or from work, or maybe you can listen to podcasts on the job, or maybe you're at your workbench and you're doing a project and you're listening. Listen to what I'm saying today. There are people in your life that you love and people that their flourishing is more important than your own to you. And you love them and you want them to have God's best for their life, and you need to lead them, but you have to do it with some skill and you have to do it with some gentleness. And you have to be wise to use this. Let your words be few. You have to do it without an abundance of words. You want to listen more than you talk. You want your words to be few. And you want your words, somebody said, let your words be few. Let your words be true. Let your words be gentle. And let your words be gracious. Let your words be few. Let your words be true. Let your words be gentle. And let your words give grace, give gifts. Your words should gift people. Let them be gracious. So, gentlemen, you have in your life perhaps a wife, a precious wife, or maybe you will someday. You have in your life, perhaps, if God has given you children, you have children or grandchildren, you have people that God has sovereignly orchestrated their presence in your life, and you have leadership. And remember that as you're faithful in a little thing, you'll be a lord over many, the scriptures say. Sometimes we're ambitious and we get frustrated with that, and it doesn't feel like our opportunities are coming as quickly or as often as we would like. But be faithful in a small thing, and be faithful in others' things, and be faithful in money. And then the Bible says if you're faithful in a small thing, he will give you a large thing. And if you're faithful in others' things, he'll give you that which is your own. If you're faithful in unrighteous mammon, if you're faithful in common money, then he will give you true riches. This is from Luke and chapter 16. And I want to encourage you today. You might be doing a mundane task right now. Do it faithfully. And do it as in the presence of the Lord. And do it for the Lord. And obey God every command. Remember this. Genuinely love people. Moses was literally, he told God when he prayed, kill me, God, don't kill them. Genuinely love people. Number two, have face-to-face intimacy with the Lord. This is a sense of the presence of God, continual sense of the presence of God all the time. A leader is that way. He's always God-conscious. Number three, do what God tells you to do. Every detail, complete obedience. It will be obvious what God wants you to do. Do it. Number four, get spirit-filled, gifted people to help where you're weak. Watch in your life. They will be there. Number five, don't compromise and do wrong to accomplish some good for God. If you sin, confess it, make it right, move on. Number six, explain God's commands to the people under your leadership. Be gentle with your words. Let your words be few. Let your words be true. Let your words be gentle. Let your words be gracious. But explain God's commands to the people and show them, this is what God has commanded me, and now I'm showing you what God's commanded us. And number seven, inspire people to help and give. This is huge. Number eight, inspect their work and bless them. This also is huge. And number nine, watch God visit the work with his glory, his manifest presence. Gentlemen, there you go. That's our podcast for today. I love you. I'd love to hear from you. I'd appreciate it if you rate, review, share, do all that stuff so other people can be blessed and helped with the podcast. If it's helpful to you, maybe it will be helpful to them. But even if not, I would love it if you would let me know, where do you listen to the podcast? How has it been helpful to you? Is there a way that we could improve the podcast for men? And are there subjects that you would like us to talk about? Until next time, gentlemen, God bless each and every one of you. Let me pray for you. Father in heaven, I pray for everyone listening to the sound of my voice. I know my brothers and my sons and maybe someday, maybe even a grandson or two, but someday maybe more, and maybe others that we cherish are listening to the sound of my voice today from up here in my loft in the carriage house on Bittersweet Farm. And I pray, God, that you would inspire them to lead and inspire them to follow you and to lead, to follow you and to help others follow you and to lead others to follow you. I pray that you fill them with your Holy Spirit. I pray that you convict them of sin. I pray that they would walk in humility before you all the days of their life and never turn aside to the right or to the left. In Jesus' name, amen.